Okay, we're in Jeremiah 11. This is the Old Testament lesson now for the 18th Sunday, October 8th. And we sort of drop into the middle of things in Jeremiah 11. As you could figure out, we're sort of in the first part of the book where Jeremiah is essentially preaching God's word of warning and judgment chapter after chapter against the sins of God's people. The theological issue is sort of same old, but it's getting to a breaking point. And essentially it's God's people taking God's grace and salvation, if you will, for granted, kind of a cheap grace issue without understanding the consequences of their sin and actually multiplying sins. I mean, the worship of Yahweh had been mixed with false worship. You can read all that stuff. But the problem is essentially one in Jeremiah 7, the famous temple speech where they sort of say, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, implying that as long as, it's kind of this, you know, as long as there's a church going on somewhere and the choir sings pretty, I guess God's in his heavens and all is right with the world. And to realize that this actually has to do with our relationship with God as God's people and as his people with the rest of the world, you can't just assume all this stuff. Remember that Jeremiah is the first time, along with Ezekiel, you get this this problem of individual responsibility for sin that Tom Eggers' paper, no, well, that wasn't at the symposium, that was at the Monday thing. About coming to grips with punishing the iniquity of the fathers upon the sons unto the third and fourth and even fifth generation of those who hate me. That's a quatenus insofar as kind of argument. But people were quoting that in Jeremiah and sort of saying, why are we getting blasted because of the sins of our fathers? And remember that great line, that's the context of Jeremiah. No, that's Ezekiel 18. Ezekiel has the same thing, but it's also in Jeremiah. Ezekiel's version is the nephesh that sins shall die, but they were quoting that sour grapes proverb. That's what Jeremiah has. It's the same problem. So he says, well, you're not really being punishing for the sins of your father. You're being punished for your own sins. And they are sufficient unto the day. So this is the context of this. Now, in the middle of all of that, really law-based preaching, if you will, of judgment, Jeremiah has these sort of soliloquies and interspersed throughout the book, where he sort of turns to God and says, you know, this is tough sledding. Not only am I banging my head against the wall, nobody's listening to me, but they're actually threatening me, threatening my life. And in these passages, he's sort of pouring out his heart to God. And of course, the point is, he's got nothing but God. He's kind of been brought to his own knees before God and can do nothing else than throw himself to the one who judges rightly and vindicates the righteous listens to his cause. So that's the summary of the text. Now let's read the Hebrew. Where did we pick up? We're in Jeremiah 11, verse, where do we start? 18. Yahweh Hodiani, nice, perfect, hiphil perfect of Yadah with an object suffix. Literally, Yahweh has caused me to know, and I knew, while consecutive. Now the problem is, of course, what is the direct object? What is it that God has caused him to know? Because that's not here, even in the context. There's a reference earlier in this chapter to the fact that they were conspiring against him. And that's what I think most people assume. You almost have to add an it in this sentence. Yahweh has caused me to know it. That is, that these people are not just, you know, bad-mouthing me, but they're out to get me. They actually have conspired a plot. That comes clear in the next verse. And I know, or knew, past tense of the while consecutive. It's interesting. I think the flag on the play there actually suggests, without textual evidence, reading a da'a, which does have an awkward comma's hey at the end. Why is there a comma's hey at the end of that? Unless it's cohortative, and it's not cohortative because it's while consecutive. that they want you to read it ada, which would turn that final hey into the object suffix, and I knew it. Again, that still doesn't give you an antecedent, but it would make a little bit more sense out of the form. Well, okay. Then, here ethani, hiphil of ra'ah, you have caused me to know their deeds. Alal is really the verb to do. Amalal is an action, a deed. But this is almost always used with sort of a bad deed. Not necessarily neutral deeds, but sort of evil things. So, then you have caused me to know, or caused me to see, and this seems to answer the question of what is it that God has caused me to know. It's their plan, their deeds. And I, like a kevis, like a sheep, aloof technically means tame, a domesticated animal. So sort of a gentle, tame sheep. I, like a tame sheep, will be led. Yuval is actually the hafal imperfect. It's third person because the subject is actually the sheep here. This is almost a clipped relative clause. Like a sheep, which will be led from Yuval, which means to lead. Hafal, be led. Led to the slaughter. Not sacrificial slaughter as much as just what you do with animals when you get hungry. That's a tabak. There's another different words for kill. So he doesn't see his life as a sacrifice. They're just going to grind him up and spit him out. Like a sheep, a tame sheep, a gentle sheep, will be led to a slaughter. And not I knew that against me they had kashav machshavot, a nice cognate in object which Hebrew likes. Have they considered considerations? kashav means to plan, plot, consider, think things out, and machshav from the same root means what you consider, your thoughts or considerations. So I guess I didn't know that it was against me, Ali. Against me, they considered their stuff, their plots. And then you sort of have, here's what they must have been saying. Nashkita, that actually you can parse, right? Hiphil, imperfect, cohortative, first plural, shakat, to destroy. Let us destroy an eighth. Turn the page. A tree in its bread? Lechem? This is kind of an extended use of lechem for food. So let us destroy a tree. This is almost always translated in its fruit or something, while it's bearing fruit, which is a really dumb time to cut down a tree. In Deuteronomy, I think it is, in dealing with some of the laws of living in the land, they actually make this explicit point of disallowing. You can't cut down trees if they're bearing fruit during a time of siege, which actually adds another piece to this. This is even a dumber thing to do. When you're under siege and food is precious, you don't cut down trees just as they're beginning to bear fruit. But it's interesting, some commentaries have suggested that the root here of laham might be the same root from milchama, to wage war. You remember laham in the Nifal means to wage war. So it might be you shouldn't cut down a tree during waging war with reference to that Deuteronomic law. I don't know. They're stuck. You'll see there's a suggestion by the text editors to read it lecho, which reads leach as the noun for strength or vigor. You should not cut down a tree in its vigor, which is saying the same thing with sort of a half-hearted emendation. It works. Anyway, you're going to end up in the same place. a tree in its season. And of course, this is a metaphor for the person of Jeremiah. I mean, he's just getting cranking here in terms of his prophetic ministry, and he's got a little ways to go. But they, in fact, want to cut him down before he bears any more fruit because they don't like the fruit. And let us, Karat, let us cut him off, may Eretz Chaim, from the land of the living. That's easy enough. And his name not will be remembered old. Yizakir, right by the book, a nice Niphal imperfect. And his name will not be remembered forever. Okay, now we get to sort of the punchline, 20. Yahweh Tzivaoth, Shofet Tzedek. Yahweh Tzivaoth judges righteousness. Whatever that really means. Does he judge the righteous person? The righteous one? There's a parallel passage here that the footnote alerts you to, by the way, in 20:12, where you have a very, almost exactly the same line. It's in another one of his confessional soliloquies, if you will, where he's making the same point. In the end, what can I do but throw myself to the one who judges the righteous one, or judges righteously? To Yahweh Tzivaoth, you know, frankly, coming off the servant song of last week, this is a nice connection to that theme of suffering for the sake of the witness to God's message, and letting God figure out what's right and what's wrong in these cases. Yeah, but Yahweh Tzivaoth judges righteousness, testing, bachan, testing the kidneys and heart. All right? Kidneys as a metaphor for probably your inner self, right? Kidneys is probably more your emotion, and heart is probably more your mind in Hebrew thought. But you could probably gloss both of these as a pair for your inner emotions. Testing the mind and heart, or heart and mind. I will, verse 20b, I will see, I will ra'ah, the nekamah, I will see your, nanakam is almost always translated judgment, vengeance, or restitution, or retribution. Retribution. From nakam, that means to make right. It's really a justice word. I will see your justice from them. Right? You work it out, God. At this point, it's beyond my power or even my authority. You work this out. And I'll just trust that you're doing the right thing. I will see your, that's a little softer maybe than your retribution against them. Like, I won't be happy unless you blast them, God. That's up to God. I mean, I won't take away from the fact that if you read on in verses 21 and following, the narrative sort of reminds us that he did get rid of some of these guys. but, you know, it's kind of the epilogue, and it's not necessarily a sort of a knee-jerk reaction. God does what God does. In this case, this is what God did. But let's finish verse 20. I will see your recompense or judgment. I translate this judgment, justice from them, because to you I have galad, my reed. Now, galah is another funny form here. If this is the P-ale of galah, then it means to reveal. I have revealed my reed. A lot of people say that doesn't really work. You generally don't reveal your case, your lawsuit, so to speak, or to plead my case. There is, again, there's a footnote on this one. What's 20C? Did I look at that? What's 20C? Oh, again, just a suggestion to read galofi from the root galal. It means to commit or entrust. I'm not sure it doesn't get you to the same place. For to you I have entrusted my case. But the point is the same. Galal certainly seems to work here, even if it's not the most common idiom. So to you I have revealed or committed, either way. I've sort of given over my reeve. And reeve is a technical term for lawsuit often, but it sort of means my gripe. my complaint. And I give it to the judge, and here I'm sort of letting him worry about it. Okay, well, that's the Hebrew text. I don't have any comments or questions. You can figure out how this relates to Mark chapter 9, Jeff, but maybe one of those. It actually, like I said, I think this actually follows from Isaiah 50, where we were last week in some way. So let's go to the Greek.